Right, cheers. So I'm going to talk about an infrastructure, a system called Granola, which is an infrastructure for building distributed storage applications. And at its core, what that really means is a distributed transaction coordination protocol, and one that provides strong consistency without locking. So our domain here is one of distributed storage, and in this case, we're addressing a client-server model, where we have servers called repositories. And these are the machines that store data and run operations on this data. And in here, we're considering kind of large data center-wide deployments. And then we have clients which issue transactions to these repositories to access and modify this data. So you might have clients sending a request to perform a bank transfer or in a financial system, or a file modification in a distributed file system, or a wall post in a social network. And these operations, these transactions, are issued either to a single repository or to multiple repositories concurrently as an atomic operation. So why do we want transactions? Now, when I refer to transactions in this talk, I'm really referring to atomic operations. And we certainly want atomic operations within a single repository, because this is what lets us ignore concurrency amongst other operations at that repository. But it's also highly desirable to have atomic operations across multiple repositories, distributed transactions, since many operations involve data that exists in multiple repositories. So, for example, a bank transfer with accounts that live on multiple machines, or a stock order that involves quantities stored on different repositories. And so distributed transactions allow us to avoid inconsistency between these repositories. But unfortunately, distributed transactions are hard, because there's an inherent tension between or trade-off between consistency and performance. So if we decide to go for consistency, we'll typically use some kind of variant on two-phase commit with strict two-phase locking to provide isolation. And approaches like these, a lot of people tell you, are rarely used in practice because it's due to a perception that these are prohibitively expensive for use in large-scale high-performance systems. And some of the reasons for this are due to multiple message delays, multiple forced log writes, locking and logging overhead. And even in the case of locking overhead alone, studies of typical online transaction processing systems have estimated just managing locks can take 30 to 40% of CPU time on these typical OLTP workloads. Then on the other hand, the systems that opt for performance instead of consistency. So we have systems that target consistency only within a single row or partition. And we also have systems that offer weaker consistency models, like eventual consistency. And a lot of the systems in this latter category offer weak consistency, not just for performance, but also for partition tolerance. But the problem here is that they place the burden of consistency on the application developer or the end user. And there's a growing body of evidence that programmers and developers find it quite hard to build some kind of applications on a weak consistency model. And you're seeing this at places like Google, for example, who are in the process of building distributed transactional storage within their core infrastructure, because they found it hard to provide the kind of guarantees they want without it. So this is where we come in, and we introduce a protocol that provides both strong consistency and high performance, at least for a large class of transactions. And one of the key ways that we do this is by introducing a new transaction class, one which lets us to provide strong consistency without locking. So let's get to our transaction model. Granola provides a specific type of transaction, which we call one-round transactions. And they're similar to mini transactions in Symfony, if you're familiar with that. These are expressed in one round of communication between the clients and the repositories, where the clients package up a set of operations, send them off to the repositories. The repositories execute them and respond to the client. And this is really similar to the use of stored procedures in a modern modern database management system. And these transactions execute to completion at each participant. But unlike general database transactions, they don't involve multiple phases of communication between repositories or between repositories and the client, other than optional commit or abort vote. So now that said, Granola allows for a pretty rich set of operations. And as far as Granola is concerned, each transaction is just an uninterpreted byte string that it communicates from the client application to the server application. So clients can invoke arbitrary operations like modifying a file or executing a query. And within this transaction model, we provide three specific classes of transaction, which are going to be key to the performance benefits that we can provide. So we have single repository transactions. These are pretty basic. These are ones that execute on a single repository. And we imagine that most operations will be single repository, since application developers typically design the applications such that most transactions execute just on one machine. But we also have support for distributed transactions, which are usually the problematic ones. And we have two classes of distributed transaction. We have coordinated transactions, which are a more general form of distributed transaction, but also for independent transactions, which is a new type of transaction that we specifically optimize for. So let's go into these in a bit more detail. So coordinated transactions are the type of transaction that's basically provided by two-phase commit, where each participant decides whether it wants to vote, commit, or abort for the transaction, and they vote on this transaction, and the transaction only commits if everyone votes to commit. An example here is a typical example of a bank transfer where you want to transfer money from Alice to Bob, and we can only do so if Alice has sufficient funds in a bank account. So we have to first vote to say whether or not there's sufficient funds in the account. And we provide these transactions for completeness, but in Granola we're really advocating for a different type of transaction. We're advocating for the independent transaction model. And these are distributed transactions where each participant will make the same decision about whether to commit or abort the transaction. And these transactions execute atomically across each participant, but in isolation. So examples include adding 1% interest to each bank balance or computing the total amount of money in the bank. And these are transactions, in this case, that involve a large number of repositories. But these are a new type of transaction. So what kind of applications do they apply to? Now, there's evidence in the HStore work and subsequent work by Thompson and Abadi on deterministic transactions that these kind of transactions are actually quite common in typical OLTP-style workloads. And an independent transaction can be used for any of these. For any read-only transaction, can be implemented as an independent transaction. Any transaction that always commits, it's an atomic operation that always commits. A transaction that updates replicated data, or a transaction where the commit decision is a deterministic function of shared state. And an example of this is TPCC, which is a very common database benchmark. It's designed to be representative of a large-scale order processing system across multiple warehouses. And this can be partitioned such that every transaction is either single repository or independent. So there's no coordinated transactions at all. There's no voting on whether to commit or abort. And one way that we can do this is one transaction in TPCC, a very common one, is called the new order transaction. This creates a new order across multiple warehouses. And this transaction only aborts if the client specifies an invalid item number for that transaction. And we can actually compute this locally at each participant if we just replicate this item table. And this is a read-only table in this benchmark, so we can replicate that. But we can also update the item table using an independent transaction also. So now it's time to get to the actual protocol we use to run transactions. Granola itself is a library that has two halves, and it sits in between the client and the server code. So the developer provides the client application and the server application, and then Granola sits in the middle and handles all aspects of transaction coordination. And the developer can use this to build all sorts of different distributed storage applications like databases or object stores. So the client application invokes requests with the client library, and then as far as the application is concerned, they magically get executed on the server application in the correct order and reliably. Now, one thing to note is that we actually replicate each repository in our system. Each repository is actually a replicated state machine. I'm not going to talk about that in this talk, and so for the duration of this talk, you can basically assume that each repository is a single fault-tolerant machine. But just note that no replication stage is actually required unless I explicitly mention it as a forced log write. So each repository in Granola is in one of two modes. The repositories function primarily in timestamp mode, which is the mode where we don't use locking. And this is where we can handle single repository transactions and independent transactions. But if a coordinated transaction arrives at a repository, dynamically switches into what we call locking mode for the duration of that transaction, and then it can switch back out. So locking mode is the mode where we need to be in when we want to handle this kind of old school type of vote-based transaction. So we're not going to use locking for concurrency control, so what are we going to do? Well, we actually use timestamps, and essentially it's a really simple idea. each transaction is assigned a timestamp, a number, and a given transaction is given the same timestamp at every participant. And so the participants, the repositories, then go ahead and execute these transactions in timestamp order. And since every repository executes in the same order, these timestamps actually define a global serial order, which gives us serializability or strong consistency. So the key questions here, how do we assign timestamps in a scalable, fault-tolerant way without having some kind of centralized coordination service? And also, how do we make sure that we always execute in timestamp order? So let's start with the protocol for single repository transactions. When a client issues a request, it sends along the highest timestamp is observed in any previous transaction. The repository then assigns a timestamp to that transaction that's higher than the client provided value and higher than the last thing executed at the repository and its local clock value. And then when it comes time to execute the transaction, the repository does so in strict timestamp order before sending the response and the timestamp to the client. So let's just run through that protocol. So first thing the repository does is it chooses a timestamp for that transaction higher than the client provided timestamp. Then it runs the replication protocol to log the request and the timestamp. And this is the only time in the protocol where we have to run state machine replication. And then finally, it executes the transactions in timestamp order, queuing up transactions if necessary to make sure that it does so, and then responds to the client with the timestamp. So this is a parallel algorithm, and the repository can be accepting and logging many transactions in parallel. But the key here is the transactions are executed serially at the application in timestamp order. So what about independent transactions, which recall other distributed transactions that we handle? So these follow the same protocol, except that we need to make sure that all participants assign the same timestamp. And we do this by using a voting protocol. So each repository chooses a proposed timestamp for the transaction. The repositories then exchange vote messages to send their proposed timestamps. And every participant will choose the highest timestamp for among these votes to be the final timestamp for that transaction, which should be consistent across all the participants. So again, the protocol looks like this. It's the same protocol as for single repository transactions, except for the voting stage. So first, it chooses a proposed timestamp, runs a replication protocol, sends a vote to all the other participants, waits to receive all the votes, picks the highest timestamp, and then executes in timestamp order. Now, you'll note here that we actually only had a single forced log write, even though it's a distributed transaction. That's a big improvement on traditional two-phase commit-style protocols. So just to reiterate, our invariant is that we won't execute a transaction until it has the lowest timestamp of all concurrent transactions. And since repositories execute transactions in the same timestamp order, this guarantees serializability. Now I'm going to show you two scenarios in this protocol and how it deals with ordering. And if you get through these, you should have a pretty good idea of how the protocol works. So here we have two repositories, repository 1 and 2. And I'm showing two data structures for each of them. I'm showing a queue, which is basically the queue of transactions at that repository that haven't yet been executed, and also a history, which is just the log of transactions that have been executed at that repository. And I have two clients here, which I'm calling Alice and Bob. It's easier to say that than saying client 1 and client 2 all the time. So Alice first issues a transaction, a distributed transaction, T1, to repositories 1 and 2. They each assign a proposed timestamp to that transaction independently. And we see here repository 1 chose 9 and repository 2 chose 3. And now they vote on these timestamps by sending vote messages. And in this case, the vote from repository 1 hasn't quite made it to repository 2. And this is very possible. It's an asynchronous system, and we can't rely on messages arriving in any particular order. It could have been lost or delayed or what have you. But repository 1 does have a full set of votes. It's got the vote from repository 2. So it can assign a final timestamp to T1 of 9 and then respond to Alice. So meanwhile, Bob issues a single repository transaction, T2, to repository 2. And it gets timestamp 5 at the repository. And now we're in a situation where repository 2 can't actually execute T2 yet because it must always execute transactions in strict timestamp order. And T1, which currently has the lowest timestamp, hasn't yet received a full set of votes. But eventually the vote for T1 comes in, and T1 gets the highest timestamp from 9 and 3, which is 9. And then we can execute those transactions in timestamp order, so T2 followed by T1. And what we've observed here is a global serial order of T2 happening before T1, which based on the timestamps, which is fine because Bob didn't observe the effects of T1, and we still guarantee serializability here. But what if that wasn't the case? What if Bob did observe Alice's transaction? And this is a situation where the timestamps provided by the client are critical. So recall the client provides its highest observed timestamp along with any transaction requests. And this guarantees that any subsequent transaction is serialized after any transaction that it may have observed. And this is a really key part of our protocol. So let's take a look at an example. So we roll back in time here to a point where repository 1 has just finished executing T1. And now Bob issues the transaction here to go and observe the effects of T1. So Bob's observed T1, but note here that Bob has also observed the timestamp of 10, which is higher than T1. Bob's observed that transaction then gets a higher timestamp, so Bob's highest observed timestamp is 10. Now when Bob issues a subsequent transaction to repository 2, it will get a higher timestamp than 10, in this case 11. And when the vote finally comes through, this will result in a final serial order of T1 happening before T2 and then T3. So what you've seen here is that using what on the surface appears to be a fairly simple protocol, we've been able to guarantee serializability in a fully distributed way. And there's no centralized coordinator here handing out timestamps, and we've been able to do so without locking. And what's interesting to note here is that each repository is able to execute its transactions without knowing what's going on in any other repository. So we've covered our protocol for timestamp-based transaction coordination, but there are still some very important things remaining, like interoperability with coordinated transactions and recovery from failures, and we cover these in more detail in the paper, but I'm going to briefly outline our protocol for coordinated transactions here, which require switching in to locking mode. So coordinated transactions involve the application of each participant determining a commit or abort vote before running the transaction, which requires locking because once the participant has decided whether to vote commit for a transaction, we need to make sure that no other transaction can modify state that was used to determine that vote. So in the case of a bank transfer, if we decide that Bob has sufficient funds in his bank account, we need to make sure that no one comes and modifies Bob's bank balance before the transfer is complete. So we use the same protocol as for independent transactions, except that there's a prepare phase where the application determines whether to commit or abort the transaction and acquires any locks. And we also abort if there's a lock conflict. So first the prepare phase happens, the application acquires any locks, sends its vote. We then follow the timestamp voting protocol. And then once we've done that, the repository can actually execute transactions out of timestamp order. As soon as it receives all of its votes, it can execute these transactions. And this is important for recovery, which we detail in the paper. But we still maintain the invariant that even if the execution happens out of timestamp order, the execution still matches the global serial order. And this is provided by our use of locks, since any current transactions don't conflict, they must commute, therefore they can be swapped around in their order without affecting the state of the system. So the final result of a series of transactions executing at a repository in locking mode is the same as if the transactions were executed one at a time in timestamp order. And this allows repositories in different modes to communicate with each other. So here we have repository 2. It's in locking mode because it's dealing with a coordinated transaction. And we have repository 3, which is not in locking mode. It's in timestamp mode. Both these repositories can be involved in an independent transaction together, even though they're in different modes, since they both follow this timestamp protocol. And this allows repositories to switch into locking mode when needed and switch out independently. And finally, being in locking mode also affects the execution of other transactions at the repository. So independent transactions are also processed using the lock-based protocol when we're in locking mode. But no locks are required for single repository transactions when we're in locking mode, and we detail this in the paper. So let's get down to some evaluation. So we implemented Granola as a Java library and deployed it on 20 servers co-located on the same LAN. These are slightly old machines here, 2005. And the throughput we observed in our system was CPU bound. And we observed approximately 65,000 transactions per second on a given repository in our benchmarks at under 1 millisecond latency. And this jumped up to well over 100,000 transactions per second on more modern hardware. And we also compare Granola against an extended version of the Symphonia protocol, which is a great protocol for distributed transaction coordination, which we modified to operate with remote clients and also to support general operations. So I'm going to discuss our macro benchmarks here, which we evaluate using the TPCC benchmark. And what's interesting is that when we implemented this benchmark, we actually took an existing implementation of TPCC that was designed for a non-distributed deployment, had no concept of distributed transactions, and we used Granola to provide the distributed transaction coordination. So basically, we took a version of this code, stuck it on every repository, and there was very minimal code changes had to be made other than responding to remote requests and translating warehouse numbers to repository IDs. We use the same partitioning strategy as in the HStore work, where we can implement TPCC using entirely single repository transactions and independent transactions. So this figure shows scalability for a deployment with one TPCC warehouse per repository, where we increase the number of repositories. And Granola here is the blue line, which is a protocol which runs in timestamp mode here because there's no coordinated transactions. We also evaluate against Granola, which is manually set to run in locking mode. This is the point of comparison. This is the orange line. And Symphonia, which is the green line. And we see that the two lock-based protocols fare far less well here due to the overhead primarily of aborts and retries, because this TPCC has quite a lot of distributed transactions that conflict. We actually see a reduction in throughput when going from one repository to two repositories here. And this is because no locking is required on a single repository. And Granola in locking mode gets slightly better performance than Symphonia, just because we only have to hold locks for one message delay, and so there's a lower likelihood of lock conflicts. So approximately 10% of transactions in TPCC are distributed transactions, but we wanted to evaluate what happens with much higher levels of distributed transactions. So we examine a workload that's comprised entirely of new order transactions on a two-repository topology, where we vary the fraction of these transactions that are executed as distributed transactions between 0 and 100%. And as expected, the lock-based protocols scale fairly poorly here, due to lock conflicts primarily. And this is a result that's been that we've observed in previous work on the same benchmark. But Granola in timestamp mode actually does very well here. And you'll see that throughput, there's basically a reduction of a little over half in throughput for Granola when moving from 0% to 100% distributed transactions. This is quite a good result given that at 100% distributed transactions, every transaction involves more communication and execution at two repositories rather than one. So why do we do better here? Well, a big factor here is that we don't have to do any locking in timestamp mode, which saves around 40% in terms of CPU overhead just for lock management, but also a lot of saved work in terms of latency and wasted work in terms of aborts and retries in the lock-based protocols. We have only 3 one-way message delays in the protocol. And also, we have only a single forced log write, which is the same as Symphonia, but a lot better than traditional two-phase commit-style protocols. So just to conclude, Granola provides strong consistency and high performance for distributed transactions. And we do this by exploiting independent transactions to provide coordination without locking. And I'd love to take any questions. Thanks.
Hey, I'm Marcos Aguilera from Microsoft Research Silicon Valley. And this is cool stuff. I'm a big believer of transactions in distributed systems. I had a comment and a question, which is, you seem to equate the notion of strong consistency with serializability, whereas I would think of serializability as being an isolation property as opposed to consistency property.
Well, this is due to the distributed systems world and database world having just different sets of terminology. So certainly in the ACID model, consistency, it's isolation, but in the distributed systems world of like Nancy Lynch style, it's a consistency property. But yeah, with different languages, same thing.
Yeah, the word consistency in the systems community seems to mean a lot of different things. So it's kind of
it's from just two different worlds coming together and using different terminology. Yeah, I agree that it's very confusing.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And the question that I had is that you have a notion of a repository being in locking mode or independent mode, but I think you can extend a notion for individual objects being in each one of these modes. And if you were to do that, you'd probably get a faster system than you have, because you don't need to change the entire repository just because one transaction wants to be, let's say, running in independent mode or in the locking mode, and other objects can, you know, the objects can be independently. You can choose these modes to be independently for each one of these.
Certainly, if we had a concept where we could subdivide into separate kind of objects, we don't really have an object model here. We just, you know, we're agnostic to what the application looks like, and so in our implementation, we just kind of treat the application as a big blob. But if we had more knowledge about, you know, what objects we were touching, I think you could do a lot better that way.
Oh, I see. Do you have to have that knowledge before you start executing the transaction, you're saying?
Yeah. So when we go into locking mode, we actually you actually have to ask the application ahead of time to acquire locks and to determine a vote in locking mode, whereas when we're in independent and timestamp mode, we just send the vote before even telling the application. So in timestamp mode, the application doesn't even hear about the transaction until it's already committed.
Got it. Cool. Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks very much.
Timmy Zhu from Carnegie Mellon. So this sounds like some pretty good work, because you have both consistency and performance. So are you suggesting we should use this all the time, or like what cases would we want to use this versus something else? And
yeah, this is like the best question. This is like, what's wrong with the system, right? I think look, in terms of limitations of this work, I think one, the transaction model. I mean, I'm advocating this independent model, but clearly not all applications are going to work with this model, right? And the other issue is that when we have failures, like partitions or long-term failures, we have to switch into this lock-based protocol. Because we have more details on the paper. When we have a partition, we have to switch into locking mode. And then you have the same problem with any system that provides serializability or strong consistency. If there's a partition, you might have you might stall. And so I can certainly see arguments for using weaker consistency models if you want to provide guaranteed availability. But we're shooting for these kind of systems, banking systems, et cetera, where you really want to have correctness. And so I think that's where we're shooting in terms of the whole CAP theorem trade-off. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And also, I'm not too familiar with some of the distributed systems terminology, but this sounds slightly similar to Lamport clocks. How is this related?
Yeah, it's very similar to Lamport clocks. The fact that we're sending timestamps to the client and the timestamps sending them back, that's basically Lamport clocks. I mean, the difference here, Lamport clocks don't include this notion of voting on timestamps to have a consistent timestamp for a given transaction. Also, I simplified a little bit in this talk. We actually use a local system clock to determine timestamps as well for performance reasons, and that's a little bit of a departure from that. And that's similar to some work in Thor a long time ago.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Jibu Xie from Virginia Tech. I just wonder, how do you compare Granola with Calvin in terms of protocol and performance?
Yeah, so Calvin's a system that came out very recently by Dan Abadi and Alex Thompson. It's quite similar, and we kind of worked these in parallel, and we discovered one day we were doing very similar things. Calvin, instead of having this distributed voting protocol, they have an agreement layer on top, basically, they call the scheduling layer or the sequencing layer. So they have higher latency because they have to do all-to-all communication ahead of time to determine this global serial ordering before sending them down to the repository. So there's potentially a scalability limit because they have all-to-all communication. They do manage to scale to 100 nodes, which is impressive. I was surprised, but they do it. Potentially there's a scalability limit in their system, and they have higher delay because they can only run this agreement every 10 milliseconds or so, because otherwise it'd be too expensive. But the advantage that they have is once they've done that, then there's more freedom. They have more freedom to shift the transactions around at an individual repository. So they have multi-threaded execution at a repository, where we're more in the eight-store camp of single-threaded execution, one transaction at a time.
Yeah. All right, thanks.
Thank you.